This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. It's World Heart Day today, so we'll be discussing what you need to know about your heart rhythm and when a pacemaker might be needed. So you probably know what your heartbeat sounds or feels like, and you would know what a normal heart rhythm should feel like. It should be represented by regular beats. But when there is a problem with our heart rhythm, the heart can beat too fast, too slow, or irregularly. Now, pacemakers are devices that have been around for more than 60 years, and their purpose is to help regulate the heart rhythm when you have such problems. So joining me on the show today to discuss more about pacemakers is Dato Dr. Razali Omar, consultant electrophysiologist and cardiologist from Cardiovascular Central KL or CVSKL. We'll be looking at who might need pacemakers, what does it mean, what is the procedure like to insert one, and how the technology of these devices have advanced over the decades. How are you today, Dr. Razali? I'm sorry, you're muted. Dr. Razali, you're muted. But in the meantime, you can call us if you have any questions about, you know, if you are concerned about a heart rhythm problem that you may be having. Our phone lines are open, 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And this show is the second part of a two-part series with CVSKL in conjunction with World Heart Day 2020. How are you today, Dr. Razali?
I'm very well, thank you. So sorry, yeah, muted. So that's the problem about Zoom. I used to come to your studio, and
I know.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Xiaoyik. Nice to see you again. Yeah, and I'm very excited this time to talk about pacemakers.
That's right. But before we go into that, we need to talk about what's normal and what's abnormal. What is normal heart activity actually, and what helps us to regulate that?
Right. So, yes, the normal heartbeat in general has been is in the range of about 60 beats per minute to 100 beats per minute. Now, I have to be very careful in saying this because anything below 60, we define it as bradycardia, means slow heartbeat. But there are people who are super fit athletes whose resting heartbeat is below 60. So it is not just simply looking at the value of the heart rate and decide, oh, you have too slow a heartbeat and therefore you need a pacemaker. So many times I have patients who were sent to me thinking that they need a pacemaker. In actual fact, they are very fit and that they don't need a pacemaker because once we put them on the treadmill, the heart rate goes up adequately. So anything below 60 by convention is called bradycardia. Brady, the word brady means slow. And anything above 100 beats per minute is called tachycardia. Cardia, slow and fast heartbeat. But again, it depends on a lot of factors. The heart, as you know, does not just beat like a robot. It is in response to the need of the body. And the brain will be able to have the feedback. Like when we are sleeping, for example, the body does not need a lot of oxygen. And therefore, the brain will tell the heart to slow down. It's like the bears in winter, they hibernate and their heart rate goes down to as low as 10 beats per minute so that they don't utilize a lot of energy. So our brain will tell the heart to slow down to as low as 30, 40 beats per minute when we are asleep. But when we exercise and the brain decides that the muscles needs more oxygen, and it will tell the heart to pump accordingly. So when we go and exercise, our heart rate can go up slowly from a resting 70 to 90 to 110, 150, and so on and so forth.
All right. So, you know, on previous shows where you've come on, you've sort of used the metaphor, you've described yourself as an electrician because that's, you know, the system of the heart that you specialize in. Help us understand, right? How is this electrical system regulating and ensuring our heart continues to beat?
Right. So, you know, I think I've been in BFM for quite some time, and most of the focus has been on the fast heartbeats. We talk about atrial fibrillation, we talk about supraventricular tachycardia, but the job of an electrician also encompasses the slow heartbeat. So I always tell my patients, when your heartbeat is too fast, I need to fix it. And fixing it is by performing procedures like radio frequency catheter ablation. But when your heartbeat is too slow, I cannot fix it by ablating. I need to fix it by replacing the battery in your heart. And that is the pacemaker.
All right. Okay. So do you want to go a little bit, just very briefly, into what might be some causes of the too slow, the too fast, or the irregular heartbeats?
Okay. So our heart is driven by a pacemaker called the sinoatrial node. So we have an inbuilt pacemaker. Of course, that is stimulated by the brain through the nerves, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. The SA node, for a short form for sinoatrial node, is situated in the right upper chamber of the heart, called the right atrium. So it determines our heart rate. And the electrical impulse that is generated from this SA node has to be distributed to all the rest of the heart. And this is done in milliseconds, 1/1000th of a second. So sometimes as we grow older, just like the car battery, the SA node or the pacemaker cells, they don't perform as well. It's part of aging. And then instead of being able to generate a faster heartbeat, the heartbeat becomes slower and slower, such that the patient feels tired, feels sleepy, feels lethargic, feels that their brain is like they cannot remember very much. And worst case scenario, they even have a fainting episode and blackout and injure themselves. So there are two different types of essentially slow heartbeat. One that is due to the failure to generate the impulse from the battery. But some patients, the battery is able to generate the impulse, but the cable connecting the upper to the lower chamber called the AV node becomes not working very well. Therefore, it blocks the impulses from going down to the ventricle. So the upper chamber is beating normally, mm-hmm. but the lower chamber, which determines your heart rate, will beat very slow. And that's called an AV node block. So it can range from first degree AV block, second degree AV block, to a third degree AV block called complete heart block.
Okay, so let me get this straight. If it's a problem with the SA node, that's as if there's something wrong with the battery. If it's a problem with the AV node, there's a problem with the wiring.
With the wiring, it's like I always tell my patient, imagine the causeway linking Johor Bahru to Singapore.
Which is empty now.
Which is empty now. And before the second link, when I was a young boy living in Singapore, there's only the causeway.
That's right.
And when you block the causeway, there is no conduction, no cars that can go through from Singapore to Johor. So this is called the AV block.
All right.
So there are cars that are coming through, but they are not able to go through to Singapore. So that's what we call AV node block. But SA node block means no impulse formation, no cars coming at all. Like now, MCO.
That's right.
Cars.
That's a different kind of block that we're talking about. But, you know, if we're talking about pacemakers today, which conditions are they only for the bradycardia, the too slow heartbeat?
So if you say the word pacemaker, by definition, it is only for bradycardia. But we use a more generic term called implantable cardiac devices. So the implantable cardiac devices, the most common that most people are familiar with is called the pacemaker. And that is to correct slow heartbeat. We also implant something similar to a pacemaker, but for fast heartbeat. And we talk about this called cardiac arrest. And this is called the implantable cardioverter defibrillator, ICD. Mm-hmm. For patients with heart failure, and we have patients who have heart failure with dyssynchrony, then we implant the biventricular ICD to resynchronize the heart. So there are many types of batteries, many types of pacemakers, many types of implantable devices, and they are for different conditions of the heart. But for today's program, I think you wanted to focus on pacemaker, and that is to correct slow heartbeat.
All right. And that's because in a slow heartbeat, you wouldn't use catheter ablation, which is something that you have come on to talk about in the past.
Yes.
You wouldn't be able to use medications as well for the slow heartbeat?
Unfortunately, no. So if you have fast heartbeat, the alternatives to catheter ablation is you can give medications. But unfortunately, for slow heartbeat, if the slow heartbeat is determined to be pathological, to be a disease, and that the patient is suffering from this, then the only solution is a pacemaker. And was very interested that you mentioned 60 years ago. Pacemaker has been around for 60 years. Imagine if you were born 80 years ago. There's no pacemaker. Mm. So what do you do when you have slow heartbeat? It's interesting. And I give a lecture on the history and the evolution of pacemaker. And that 100 years ago, people used to stick needles into your chest to stimulate your heart when you have slow heartbeat. And in fact, the guy who had the first implantable pacemaker outlived the two doctors that invented the pacemaker. So it was a very interesting story. But we have come a long way, Shoghi, from a huge device that we have to, that is so big that it only lasts for 2 years, 3 years, and we have to keep on changing the battery, to being miniaturized, to being MRI compatible, to can last for 10, 12 years. But it wasn't enough. And, you know, medicine is always innovating. We innovate because there's always problems whenever we do a procedure on a patient. And we always want to try, how can we reduce the complications? How can we improve the delivery of therapy? And how can we make sure it's as safe to the patient as possible? And we now have moved on over the last 7-8 years to leadless pacemaker, where we don't even need to put any wires in the heart. The whole battery is miniaturized to 1/10 the size of a pacemaker, and we deliver it like an angiogram via the groin, and it's gone into the heart, and it stays in the heart, and it delivers pacing therapy without any operation.
So, you don't even need to do open surgery.
Well, we don't do open surgery for pacemaker, but there's a bit of incision on the skin, and we have to insert the leads through a vein so that it can carry the leads into the heart. So essentially is this, you know, in business, we never like middlemen. Mm-hmm. Middlemen. So the pacemaker, the lead is a middleman, because the brains of the pacemaker cannot be delivered into the heart because it's so big. So it has to stay on the just below your skin on your chest. But we deliver the therapy through a middleman, which is in this case leads. So now we get rid of the middleman, because most of the complications from pacemaker is related to the middleman, just like in real life. So we get rid of the middleman, we deliver the therapy straight to the heart. And therefore, the therapy, of course, will be more effective, efficient, and safe.
All right. We've jumped a little ahead. I'm going to get you to sort of go into a little bit more detail in a short while. Again, about really how is this pacemaker working? How is it implanted? What does the procedure look like? But just very quickly before we go for a break, Dr. Razali, you said it used to be huge. The pacemaker, yes. The device used to be exactly how huge we'll be talking?
Well, I mean, it was like at least 2 to 3 times the size of the current pacemaker. But because it's a radio show, I can't show you exactly how huge.
You can't, yep.
Yeah, so the current pacemaker is like maybe a 50-cent coin, 50-cent coin. For those of you who remember 50 cents, nowadays all GrabPay and all that. So the old pacemaker would be like 5 times that, like the size of your iPhone now. So, and it only lasts for 2-3 years. So, you know, that's how it started. In fact, the very, very first pacemaker, Shoghi, is not even implantable. The patient has to push a trolley where we put the pacemaker box, and the patient can go as far as the cable, which is connected to the electrical socket, allows him to.
Right. How far we've come. How far we've come.
Yes, we indeed have come a long way.
Yeah. So we'll go for a quick break. And when we come back, we can look more at the procedure. You know, what would the pacemaker be doing once it's inside you? But I'm speaking to Dato' Dr. Razali Omar, consultant electrophysiologist and cardiologist from CVS KL. That's Cardiac Vascular Central KL. It's the second part of our 2-part series with CVS in conjunction with World Heart Day. Today, we're discussing a pacemaker. Do call us if you have any questions, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik, and my guest joining me via Zoom, Dato' Dr. Razali Omar, consultant electrophysiologist and cardiologist from Cardiac Vascular Central KL, or CVS KL. It's our World Heart Day show today. We're discussing pacemakers, and, you know, just very briefly, the pacemaker, if you think about your heart as a pump, the pacemaker is the battery that keeps the heart pumping, the heart beating. It sends the the signals in order for the heart rhythm to continue. The pacemaker that we are talking about today is specifically the implantable device that is used to treat bradycardia, which is a heartbeat that is too slow. And you know, just very briefly, Dr. Rosalie, before we go into the procedure to implant it, would every individual that has bradycardia necessarily be suitable for a pacemaker?
Not really. So as I mentioned earlier in the beginning part of the program, there are patients, by definition, the bradycardia is when the heart rate is 60 and below. So there are patients who have a heart rate of 60 and below, but they do not have pathological bradycardia. So it's like, it's not a disease. It's just that they are super fit. They are triathletes, marathon runners, and their resting heart rate is like 40, 45, 50. But you ask them to run and it goes up accordingly. So when we have patients whose heart rate is slow, we will do certain tests to make sure that the patient, that this is either a physiological fitness slow heartbeat or it is a disease. Right. That needs to have a pacemaker.
Mm-hmm. And for it to be a problem for me, it would have to cause those kinds of symptoms that you talk
exactly.
about. The tiredness, exactly. Lethargy, yeah. Fainting episodes even.
Yes. Many times, you know, I get referrals only after the patient faints. But if you look carefully at the patient's record, we can actually already see that this bradycardia have already started, and the beginning symptoms may not be fainting, and we try not to make the patient faint before we actually intervene, because fainting is something very dangerous. It may not be itself life-threatening, but the circumstances, the patient, when he faints, he might be driving, he might be climbing up the stairs, and he might get some complications. So the earlier symptoms may be simple lethargy, and because this condition affects old people, you can imagine that many of these people assume that it's part and parcel of their getting older.
Mm-hmm.
And because sometimes it's so insidious, it's so slow that and it's not abrupt. If they one day they faint, then it's an abrupt symptom. They will bring it will bring them to the hospital immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But if this problem goes very slowly and they then assume that this is part and parcel. And I have had patients whose wife tells me he sleeps all the time. And then, of course, they, you know, the husband and wife will get into a fight because the husband say, "I'm getting older." But the wife say, "He used to be okay. Once we put a pacemaker, guess what? He goes out and marry another one."
Okay, let's not go there. But, you know, just very quickly again, last week, you know, we talked about wearable technology, right? Devices
yes.
that can help us to keep track of certain health parameters and heart-related parameters is the most common one. Would that be useful for people with abnormally slow heartbeats and, you know, if they're not cognizant or aware of the kinds of symptoms they should look out for?
Yes, of course. So sometimes the slow heartbeat is more, it's a bit easier to diagnose than a fast heartbeat that comes on and off or even fainting spells and the rest of the time the patient is well. So what I'm saying is that if the patient has got complete heart block, for example, if there's a disconnection in the cable, then you don't need all this wearable device because the patient's a simple ECG will show you that the patient has got a problem with his conduction system and needs a pacemaker. But yes, if the patient's symptom is intermittent, he says, "Sometimes I feel a bit dizzy and then I feel okay," a wearable device may be able to give us an inkling into what exactly is that symptom due to.
All right. So let's look at the pacemaker. You know, implanting it, what does that look like?
The implantation itself is actually quite straightforward. It's not open heart surgery. The patient needs to go into OT, under anesthesia, of course. We make sure that the patient is comfortable. And a small incision is made at the left chest for us to identify a vein called the axillary vein or the subclavian vein, where we insert via that vein to the heart. So the leads goes via the vein into the heart. And so there are two leads. So we put one lead in the right ventricle and the other lead in the right atrium. And these two leads are then connected to the brain of the pacemaker called the pulse generator or the battery. and that is then buried under the skin. All in all, the procedure should be about 1 hour and the patient go home the next day.
Mm. And following that, when they're discharged, what's the recovery process like?
So usually the wound takes about 1 week to heal. So we will advise the patient, be careful, make sure that the area of incision is dry and take care of it. And then for the next 1 month, we will tell the patient, you best not to drive. Do not carry heavy things on your left arm because it can dislodge the lead. We also tell the patients, do not lift your arm above your shoulder height. And you know, try not to wear singlets or t-shirts because you tend to outstretch your arm when you want to wear the singlet or t-shirt, and try to wear a shirt. All these are the advice that we give the patient, do's and don'ts. And then the patient come back and see us for 1 week. We check the wound and the wound is clean. We tell the patient you can shower like normal. And we will then monitor the pacemaker. See, the pacemaker is a very, very high technology device. It's like you buy, I tell the patient, it's like you buy a Ferrari. You don't buy a Toyota and then you don't go to the you go to the mechanic once a year. When you buy a Ferrari, you go to the mechanic every week because you want to fine-tune the Ferrari to give the best. So the initial part of the pacemaker, we make sure the patient comes to us 1 week, 1 month, 3 months, where we fine-tune the pacemaker so that it delivers the best for each individual patient. Because some patients need different input from the pacemaker. For example, if you have problem with SA node, Joey, therefore, I need to make sure that the pacemaker delivers the first impulse that determines the heart rate. Mm. But what if the patient is exercising? The pacemaker has also need to know that you are exercising. So imagine the pacemaker is so smart, it has sensors to note that you are walking, you are running, and it will try to mimic the physiology where it increases your heart rate accordingly. And then when you come in, the pacemaker collects all this data and give us some glimpse. And then we said, okay, how do you feel? We say, okay, doc, I feel okay the first 5 minutes of my exercise, but later I feel tired. Then we fine-tune all this to give him the best therapy so that he can go and lead as best lifestyle as possible.
All right. And, you know, once the pacemaker is in, would you expect the heartbeat to go to the so-called normal range immediately?
Yes, yes. So the main principle of the pacemaker is like when you see the show Terminator, the Terminator, the robots right. is programmed, or okay, or sorry, maybe not Terminator. Terminator is programmed to kill human beings. The robot story is programmed not to kill human beings, isn't it? So the pacemaker is programmed to not intervene when the heart rate is normal. So what I mean by that? If I put a pacemaker and the heart rate is normal, the pacemaker will not do anything. It will allow your own heartbeat to function normally. Mm. But when your heartbeat goes below a certain limit, in this case, 60 or 50, it will then intervene. So it will protect you from those episodes where you could have fainted or you could have been very tired. But as long as you are above a certain limit, it will allow your own heartbeat. But there are some patients who depend on the pacemaker. The minute we put the pacemaker, the heartbeat just stops and the pacemaker takes over. And the minute we try to stop the pacemaker, there's no heartbeat. These are called dependent patients who are dependent on pacemaker.
Well, that's terrifying. So if something happens to the pacemaker, that's very bad for the patient then.
Yes. Luckily, this is not so common. Most of the time, when we say dependent, means dependent at a certain rate, 40 beats per minute. But when we really stop the pacemaker, his own heart rate is at 20 beats per minute. So it's enough to cause him not to die, but he will feel very, he will probably faint if the pacemaker is not firing. So we tell the patient what can cause the pacemaker to not fire, which means interaction of external devices to the pacemaker. And one of the things we tell the patient is your handphone. Every one of us have got a mobile phone. We tell the patient whatever mobile devices must be 6 inches away from your pacemaker.
All right.
So if you have a pacemaker on your left chest, don't put your, for men especially, don't put your handphone on your left upper left pocket of your shirt.
All right.
It's too close to the pacemaker and it will, the electromagnetic field will then cause an interaction and the pacemaker will think that your own heart is beating and it will stop pacing.
Oh, I see. All right. And you also mentioned advances where pacemakers are now MRI compatible because that
yes,
is a,
all of
that was a concern.
Yes, it was a concern. We tell the patient you can go for X-ray, ultrasound, CT scan, you can use mobile phone, you can use microwave. You can use everything except for going for MRI. And you know now MRI is such an important test. And especially as we grow older, and these pacemakers are implanted in older people. So now all pacemakers are MRI conditional. We don't like to use the word MRI safe because we need to turn on the conditionality of the MRI safety. So when you go for MRI, you have to inform us, and we will send a team to the MRI place where we turn on the MRI compatibility so that you can undergo a safe MRI, and after that, we turn it off back again.
All right. And you also mentioned advancements in terms of making them LED-less. Now, what were the complications that were produced by the LEDs, the middlemen, that analogy you used, and how has it improved?
So over the last 60 years, as you know, there's a lot of huge improvement in the size, in the longevity, in the duration, in all the features, the sensor, and all that. But one of the things, as I say, is the middleman. And the middleman, the leads, as it were, is moving all the time. And, you know, our heart beats at 100,000 times a minute. So imagine a wire inside the heart and is moving at 100 times a minute. And the wire, just like your cable wire, has got an insulator. And this insulator, over time, can cause some degeneration and can crack. And then it will cause the pacemaker not to be able to function properly. So although the pacemaker may have a battery life of 10, 12 years, we can easily change the battery, but it's not as easy to remove the wire, because a lead which has been there for 20, 30 years is stuck to the heart, is stuck to the vein. Pulling it out needs special instruments like lasers and all that. And even then, it can cause severe complications. So for many, many years, all the scientists, all the researchers have been trying to see, can we remove the lead? What was the boundary? It's not the electronics, because the wafer technology has been around for many years. We can miniaturize the electronics, but what we cannot miniaturize is the battery. So once we are able to achieve miniaturization of the battery, and that can last for 10 years, hence the leadless pacemaker came on in 2015. We did the research. I was involved in the clinical trials and in the development of this leadless pacemaker. And we started implanting it in 2013. And the FDA approved of it in 2015. It was available in Malaysia in 2015 onwards. I think up to now, there's more than 100,000 people all over the world that has this leadless pacemaker.
All right. So if the battery life lasts for 10 to 12 years, and now with leadless pacemakers, does that mean you don't need to actually do a repeat surgery to replace the battery?
Unfortunately, yes, we need to replace the battery. Even leadless pacemaker, it lasts, again, 10 to 12, up to 14 years. But we need, unlike the old traditional pacemaker where I can remove the old battery and implant a new one under the skin, this leadless pacemaker, we cannot remove it after 10 to 12 years because it's so small, the heart will grow tissues over it. So we implant another one. So in a human heart, we can only implant maybe maximum 2 to 3. So therefore, at the moment, Xiao-Yi, this technology is suitable for older people, which means if we think that you are probably going to need only 2 pacemakers over the span of 20 years, we will suggest to you a leadless. But if you're a young man, 40 years old, I wouldn't recommend the leadless yet. The technology is not there yet. It's maybe 10 years from now, it's so small, 1/10 the size, we can implant 3 or 4 in a patient.
So if you've already had one leadless pacemaker and then you implant a second one, you're basically walking around with 2.
Yes.
But only the second one will be doing the work.
Correct. We can switch off the old one.
Ah, I see.
We can turn it off completely.
Right. Okay. So,
and because it's so small and inside the heart, nobody knows that you have a pacemaker.
Okay.
Nobody knows.
Yep.
Even an X-ray done, if you're not very familiar, the radiologists will not even see the pacemaker there.
And for the individual, do they feel anything different at all?
They will feel, if they have a lot of symptoms, if they feel tired, they feel lethargic. The minute we put a pacemaker, they say, "Doctor, I can see your face better now." I say, "What do you mean? Previously, it was a bit darkish because, you know, because the heart rate is so slow. The perfusion to the brain is less. Suddenly, I become a brighter person."
All right. We have Russell on the line with a question. Hi, good afternoon, Russell.
Good afternoon. Okay, I have a question to the doctor.
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, my doctor, I'm 70 years old. My heart, I'm a BP patient.
Yes.
And my BP is about 80 to 90 or 120, 130.
All right. Okay. Your BP is about 80, 90 above and 120, 130 below.
Yes, 130, 40.
All right.
Okay. Now, when I get up in the morning, 6 o'clock or so, I go down to make my coffee. And when I go to the kitchen, sometimes I feel dizzy, then stand for a while. Then later, when I'm okay, I go on doing what I have to do. I go down to pick up I squat down actually.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up some food or some biscuits, and when I get up, I feel dizzy.
Mm-hmm.
And I hold on to the wall for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And take a hard breathing. And then I feel better, then start walking slowly back to the table.
And this happens every day?
Yes, when I squat down to pick up something.
Mm, every time you squat down?
Yes.
All right. Any other issues, Russell?
No other issues, no.
Dato' Razali, is there anything you'd like to ask Russell before we address his question?
I mean, what medication is he taking for his hypertension?
I'm just normal medication.
Right. So, first of all...
Russell will address your question on air, yeah? All right. Thank you very much.
So, the symptom that Russell just described is what we call postural hypotension. Postural means a change in posture, especially squatting, sitting on the floor, lying in bed for some time, or even sitting on the sofa and you get up quickly. Now, Shoei, when we are young, imagine when we are young, we are sleeping deep sleep. Suddenly, your mother busts into your room and starts scolding you for waking up late. And we just jump out of bed, correct? We jump out of bed. We from a deep slumber, deep sleep. Suddenly, we jump out of bed. We don't even... And this movement, when you change your posture from a lying position to standing up, what happens to the heart? What happens to the blood? When we are lying down, the brain and the heart is at the same level. Therefore, the feeling of blood to the brain is without the interference of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
The minute we stand up and we are erect creatures, we are not like the animal, four-legged animals, where the head and the heart is on the same level mm-hmm. all the time. And this is made worse by the giraffe, because the giraffe, the neck is so tall. So when we get up, the first thing that the body will detect is a drop in blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But we do not even feel it because the body goes into hyper modification mode, and it causes what we call vasoconstriction. It improves the blood pressure. So we don't even notice a drop in blood pressure. Now, this mechanism, as we grow older, it becomes not as efficient. Even if Russell does not have hypertension and is not on hypertensive medication, squatting down and getting up, and a lot of, for example, the Muslims, they would describe to me, they say they go to the mosque, and then when they pray and then they get up, they feel a bit dizzy. That's called postural hypertension. Made worse if you're on hypertensive medication. So what Russell is feeling probably is not related to bradycardia. I have to confirm this, but it's probably related to the fact that he's 70 years old and he's taking hypertensive medication. So my advice to Russell is, first of all, don't squat. If you have to squat, you have to be... So before you get up from squatting, you probably want to sit down first, stretch out your legs. And when you get up from your bed, open your eyes, make sure your brain knows that you are awake and your body knows you're awake. Sit on the side of the bed, make sure you're not feeling dizzy before you get up. So you have to take it at stages to prevent you from falling down.
All right. I think just to wrap up, I want to talk about outlook for individuals who've had a pacemaker implanted, what kinds of outcomes? And you've already touched on it, right? You want them to be able to get back to normal functioning. But are there going to be changes, improvements in terms of survival?
Yes. So survival is usually the pacemaker, not so much survival. Many studies have shown that if you have a complete heart block and you function at a very slow heartbeat, yes, of course, in that case, maybe if we leave you alone, you probably will die because you keep on banging your head against the wall or you fall down in the bathroom. Yes, in that case, survival, yes. But if you have sinus node dysfunction, maybe it doesn't affect the survival. It's more of going back to have good quality of life and being able to do the normal things like exercise, travel, and in general, being normal again.
All right. Do you have a final message for us today, Dr. Razali? Let's look generally, what is your message for people living with a heart rhythm condition?
Again, as all the message that I've said again and again, I mean, if you like Russell just now, we assume it's postural hypertension and sometimes you go and see your doctor and, so I think all the symptoms, all the patient with all these symptoms, we need to have a look at it really carefully. So I think for those of you who have any symptoms that is potentially related to bradycardia, my advice is to go and see your cardiologist and they will be able to find out whether you need a pacemaker or not.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Razali. I've been speaking to Dr. Razali Omar, consultant electrophysiologist and cardiologist from Cardiac Vascular Central KL or CVS-KL. This has been our World Heart Day show with CVS. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.